Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances, where we cover work and money with a millennial twist and strive not to leave you with a clenched fist. That wasn't supposed to rhyme, by the way.
I thought you were going for the ad-libs drops again. And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook and SoundCloud at Paycheck and Balances.
And if you've been enjoying the podcast or it's helped you or someone you know, don't forget to hit us with a 5-star review on iTunes and subscribe. If you don't know how, visit paychecksandbalances.com/review. So what's been going on, good brother?
I actually do have something for this week as part of the transition. I don't remember what exactly led to it. This past week was actually a good week. It was productive. I got a lot done at work. I'm moving some projects ahead that I'd like to see move ahead. I'm more or less better transitioning or fully transitioning to this position that I was allegedly given in like November of 2016, but I had to close out my projects. Have you ever had that happen where you get quote unquote promoted, but you're actually still in the same organization? So you don't really have the traditional effective date. Has this happened to you? It's happened to me more than once, is why I ask.
So they basically put you in a new role and nothing else changes?
Yeah, you're like in a new role on paper, but you have to close out all of your old roles or train the new person coming into your role, et cetera, so you don't really formally move.
So I've moved into a role where I've had more responsibility and maybe didn't have to train anyone to come into my role, but suddenly found myself doing a lot more stuff and wondering why there wasn't anything attached to it. I have had that experience.
Okay. I don't think it's unique. So I just wanted to let the people know that it does happen. It happens to us as well. And yeah, I'm not complaining. It's one of those things where I don't really have a lot to complain about because I got what I wanted. I just had to close out my other obligation. So it is what it is.
Yeah. I kind of feel like there was, in my case, there was no closing of anything, but there was a lot of starting new things. I'm working on that though.
Yeah, I can see that as well.
Yeah.
And I point that out because it's all interrelated just in the different moods I was going in. I was going home one day and it was another productive day. I think I might have worked a little bit late and I was driving home and I was going through, and we've talked about this in a few episodes, that I'm like, dang, 30 more years of this, 30 to 35, possibly more years of this as we talk about the transition into the passive income and the side hustles. And maybe that becomes the full time and the full time money. And I was like, you know what? I got to shout out the generations before us because I ain't got it. Like, I ain't got it. I can't do this adulting thing. It sucks. And I admit it. And I don't know, you know, I CC'd you on an article on Twitter. I don't know if you got a chance to read it where they were talking about. Now, I feel like I'm starting to see articles start to pick on Generation Z, which comes after us, which I think they made up. But I guess they made up the millennial generation as well.
So I think that is a legit generation. I did see the headline in the article and I said, oh, God. And then I said, I'm going to read this later.
Yeah, it was like those born 1995 to 2012, according to this article. And I'm not saying this is an alternative fact or a fact. I'm just citing this particular article. Is Generation Z. It's so new that I can't even get it right. I'm still calling them millennials. And it was basically asking Generation Z, and you sent me one similar to this, what they thought of millennials. And it was funny, their interpretation, because a lot of what they were saying that is wrong with millennials is not what the older generations are saying was wrong with it. They're like, oh yeah, they're too touchy-feely and they want to work together. And I was like, what? Like these 18-year-olds, and then to give some context, they were saying the reason they're talking about this generation now is this year and in coming years will be their first year. And they're like 73 million, I think the count of the generation size was. This is the first year many of them will be graduating from college. So they're starting to move and transition into the professional workforce that we are about mid-career in. It's just interesting seeing it all take, as our faithful listener called us, older millennials begin to move not out of, but up the chain and up the ladder. And with, is it Mr. Budgets Are Sexy? Is that his formal name? Or is that the blog?
I'm going to go with both just for the sake of simplicity.
But I seem to recall he had a tweet that said it's better to be starting at a ladder you want to climb than halfway up one you don't.
Which I completely agree with that 100%.
Yeah. So it's just, you know, interesting, I guess, being on the other side. And now 1/3 of my career through in 10 years, if you look at it as 30 years, I'm like, you know, I respect anyone that was able to do this for 30 years. I don't know how they did it. And I definitely have my thoughts, which I won't go on today, about why I think it's more difficult. Mind you, I have my own bias because I'm going through it. But you know what? I tip my hat at our older generation's ability to do it because it is difficult. I would even say that it sucks to the point where I don't want to do it.
What's crazy is I'm sure there's going to be things about our generation that people say, man, I don't know how those millennials do it. And maybe for us, that's being in middle management, because I think that's where a lot of us who are in corporate America now, we're now starting to find ourselves in more lead and middle management type positions. And this is more so if you've been working for a decade, as we both have, maybe even actually a little bit more than that. So if you're like 22, 23, and you're like, wait, I'm not a middle manager yet, I'm not succeeding in life. Like, no, that's not the case at all. But for folks who are in the older side of the millennial wagon, yeah, that's kind of where we are right now. Or we're at a crossroad and having some type of internal crisis, but I won't go back down that road.
Yeah, that's probably a piece of it as well. And that is a setup for today's discussion. If you've been around, you've probably seen this in the E streets. But before I get too deep in the weeds, you know, look at this making this all about me. What about you, young brother? How is things, our middle-aged brother? How is things on your side?
It's funny because you're like, I know we got to keep going with the episode, but at the same time, let me stop and try and be courteous back. And I appreciate that, man. I appreciate that. I'm doing well. You know, I'm battling some type of allergic head cold or something right now, feeling a little stuffy and sniffly. It's just been that time of the year for me. My eyes been itching, watering. Those trees with the flowers that stink are blooming again. But all things considered, I can't complain, man. Things going well personally. Things going well professionally. And of course, some of the usual struggle thrown in for good measure.
Yeah, and I want to be clear, because some people probably listen to this, like, they have said nothing that rises to the level of complaint. And maybe that's also part of it. Like, I'm in that period where I'm like reaching for things to complain about. Like, I'm like, man, you know, man, I had to work 8.5 hours instead of 8. Yeah, you know, like, I don't want to be that guy. But this week, I am that guy. It's actually going so well that I have to like read tweets and articles to be upset about. That's how good things are going, that I got to find things to be upset about. So I also want to give credit to, I am appreciative of all the things going well.
You know what, man? I had this moment where I was trying to figure out how to spend money. And I realized just by starting something that way, it's like, oh gosh, here comes some type of humble brag. But I got a gift for the birthday. And I was like, how do I want to spend this money? And actually, this also happened around Christmas time, too, where I got Christmas money and I held on to it. Like, literally, you know, how the older family members will give you like actual cash, you know, instead of like a gift card or something like that. I got actual cash and I held on to it for like 2 months before I spent it. And I was going in stores looking for stuff I wanted to buy, you know, and I was like, what guilty pleasures can I get? What things can I spend money on that I've always been looking at, but just haven't been able to get? And for the first time, I was like, yo, I'm good. Like, I'm just going to hang on to this money because I actually have all the things that I've wanted to buy. And at this point, if I spent money on something else, it would just be really just recklessly spending for the sake of spending. And I feel like that's something that comes along with experience and starting to make better decisions, where you have those moments where you're like, yo, I'm good.
Hashtag maturity.
Yeah, man. So, you know, I can't complain too much about life, but this story that we have coming up for this week, there's people who complain about it, and then there's people who are going to read this or hear this and then complain about what these people in the story are complaining about.
Yeah, and that's this week's Money Minute. The Money Minute is living paycheck to paycheck on $500,000. And let me be clear, that is not myself or Rich, or actually, I don't know what Rich makes. I have my theories about where he falls in the 1%. I can only speak
Nowhere.
For myself, and I do not make $500,000. So this article is not about me. Let me be clear, because I didn't want people to click off the episode before I got that disclaimer out there.
Hey, it's not about me either, bruh. Not even between the two of us. It is not about us. It's funny how you get to this point where then you're trying to fight to not be in the 1%. It's like we all push to want to be successful, to live comfortably, to not have to struggle, to have a cool pool the size of Kanye's. But then when we have some of these conversations, we then don't want to be associated with the group that we're ultimately striving to be in.
Yeah. Just want to put it on the gram and let you guess how much I am or am not making.
Yeah.
So this comes from financialsamurai.com. So for those of you not familiar with the website, and that includes present company. Now, because Twitter is usually 2 to 3 weeks ahead of Facebook. This conversation will probably be coming up on Facebook in like April, perhaps May. But it was happening on Twitter in March, and that was Financial Samurai delves deeper into investing, real estate, retirement planning, career strategies, money philosophy, and much more, so we can all achieve financial independence sooner rather than later. This sounds familiar. Sounds like our mantra. Every article is written based off firsthand experience to provide the most helpful insights possible. Money matters are too important to be left up to pontification. So you seem to be more familiar with the site than myself. Anything you'd add to his about section?
So I know that he's very tell it like it is in terms of his story and his approach to different money topics. I actually learned about this site from someone that I work with who reads this site pretty regularly. And this idea of earning a high household income and people thinking that you should be doing better than you actually are, well, we've had that conversation before, but I'm not going to steal the thunder of the story.
And I did read in his about section, which I didn't go into here, that he was at one point living on 30% of his income, which is impressive. I would need to do a different calculation, but I'm probably, with bills paid, living on about 50%. And then probably after, depending on the month, I might spend that other 50%. Now, keep in mind, folks, I've talked about that. That's after the bills are paid. The 20% is allocated to retirement savings. You know, whatever remaining debt may be paid is allocated correctly. So we've talked about the 80-20 rule. Like, after the 80 is paid for, what you do with the 20 is up to you. Or the inverse. If the 20 covers all your bills, what you do with the 80 is up to you. So in my case, doing some different allocations, I'm not as good as the financial samurai, but I would say, and I was trying to come up with a karate metaphor here, but I did not have one readily. I guess my mixed martial arts debt financial planning skills are still up to par.
Yes, young sensei.
So this article is scraping by on $500,000 a year. Why it's so hard for high income earners to, you know, I don't think I read that right. Scraping by on $500,000 a year. Why it's so hard for high-income earners to escape the rat race. And in this article is a chart of the spending example of a couple who makes $250,000 each as lawyers. They have 2 children, ages 3 and 5, and they are both in their early 30s and live in New York City. And he ended that sentence with the most expensive city in America, which I believe is true. Is there a city? Actually, I know it's true because I have a calculator that I'm going to walk through. And I was actually surprised. I knew New York was expensive, but I didn't even realize it was this gosh darn expensive.
Bay Area is, I think, the one other area, and maybe L.A. Actually, I think the Bay Area is even more expensive than L.A. is. And that's without me having any formal stats. But from having lived in both cities, I think there are some expenses to consider in the Bay Area that you may not have in New York and vice versa. So I know in New York City, they also have a city tax. In the Bay Area, you have to have a car. So if you're paying for a tank of gas every week, that's going to add up versus New York City, where you can get a transit card. And some companies will even give you a reimbursement or a transit card to buy the transit card that allows you to ride the subway train each month. So there's some trade-offs, but I think in terms of expensive cities, I've probably lived in both of the most expensive cities. And again, that is not a humble brag. It is just a reality.
It's a reality fact. So let me clarify, because I ran into this same issue when you allegedly drove all the way across the country, yet could not find your way through Colorado. So right. Regionally,
it was a sharp, long line north during a time where I just wanted to get us to the other side of the country, even though we were stopping and seeing sights along the way. I was in a hurry, bruh.
I seem to recall you making a slight stop in Vegas. But that being said,
her sister was there, fam.
Was she? The Bay Area, that's San Francisco?
San Francisco, San Jose, Silicon Valley.
Okay. I get confused sometimes. I was there and I think I was in L.A. and then somebody's like, yeah, I'm in the Bay, which in my head, and I live in a big state too, we being Texas. I'm like, okay, what is that? A few hour drive? And they're like, 6. Yeah, I guess we won't be crossing paths.
Nah.
Oh, so, all right. For regionally, folks, Bay Area, San Francisco, San Diego, and I sound like I missed one.
San Francisco, San Jose, Oakland.
Oh.
Anything in Silicon Valley, I'd say, is pretty much the Bay Area.
That's where I get confused, the Jose and the Diego.
Yeah, and so if you want to compare exact city to exact city, you do New York to San Francisco, but I think of this whole region as expensive as hell.
All right. So we will plug this in the show notes, folks, but bear with us as we work our way through our table. How do you want to tackle this? Do you want to take a line item? Do you want to work through the gross salary first? Yeah, actually, as I say that out loud, I'm at least going to start at the gross salary because this was so glaring that I almost became a Republican live on the show. So the gross salary between the two individuals, $250,000 each, two lawyers, is $500,000. That's how we got to that total. They max contribute. Go ahead.
I was going to say we just lost like 10% of our audience, by the way, but that's cool. Anyway.
We might have lost 90% of our audience. They max contribute to their 401ks at $18,000 a year. That's wife and husband. So salary after 401k contribution is down to $464,000. This must be pre-tax because the effective tax rate here is 40%.
That's pretty aggressive.
$185,600 goes to taxes. Tax? We're talking about tax?
I mean, what, you got state, federal, and this is New York, right? So you have state, federal, and city. That's three different taxes.
Tax.
40% does seem high. I think the only time I've seen close to that is when I've gotten an annual performance bonus. And just bonuses in general, I find get taxed weirdly. They gross it up and they tax it as if you're going to be paid that regularly for a year. And you end up getting part of it back around tax season. But even still, like, this is pretty high. That feels pretty high.
I mean, maybe I'm so poor that I'm shocked by anybody who pays more in taxes than I make in income. Just to give some context there. So I'm not even at the level where these people are paying taxes. Not the tax rate. The amount of taxes they pay is more than I make. Gross.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
And I mean gross, not gross disgusting. But they are both the same in this instance.
Yeah, and I've struggled with this because sometimes when I see things about taxes, and it's kind of when you're in that weird space where you're working towards something, you're not balling, you're not struggling, you have goals, things that you want to work toward, and you need every dollar you can get in your pursuit of whatever it is that you're going for. But at the same time, you have to pay taxes. And I think I actually had the thing happen to me where the tax bracket changed and then I actually ended up taking less. Or like making less in the process. Like I actually felt the effect of that for like a payroll or two. And then I updated some stuff and that quickly went away.
I have to grab that from the show notes because I do not have that episode readily. But we talked about that on an episode where you can at least play the game where if your bonus or your raise or your, I don't know, anything else that would raise your gross income for the year, you can move more if you're not maxing your 401k contribution or other IRA investment to move you back into the appropriate tax bracket. I wouldn't say appropriate tax bracket, but a reduced tax bracket. But you can only, as you're saying, you can only play that game for like 1 or 2 years. And you have to be aware that you're even in the game to play it. Because I had a similar experience where I moved into a new tax bracket, like, I don't know, 7 months into the year, because that's when my promotion occurred. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I got a raise, but it was like, because I moved into a newer bracket, it ate up most of what my raise was. So then my raise, which I was all happy about, was like 1% effectively net.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was also disgusting.
Yeah, that's some BS. Different type of disgusting.
Yeah. That brings them down to $278,400 net salary between the two individuals after taxes and 401k contributions. So any thoughts now that we're down to net?
As I think about this, I remember something else and I don't know if we talked about this on an episode or behind the scenes, but just the things that you hear wealthy people say that they do with their money, or the people who have made it and are rich, the lengths they will go to pay as little tax as possible and find all of these loopholes to keep the most money possible compared to what the average person probably thinks about.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, because I think the maximum tax bracket, and I'm not going to guess it because I like to be as accurate as possible on the show, but it's not 40%. So I don't know what else is in that 40% effective tax rate. Like you said, it's probably something state, local, might even be city, plus the federal tax rate, because 40 is high. It seems high to me. It seems high to me anyway.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what it was from living in New York, because I remember I used to be salty every month when I would look and be like, this freaking city tax. But then I'm like, you know what? There are a lot of things in New York that people need to pay for, and I understand, but this freaking city tax, hated it. Hated it.
You know, it reminds me of when you book a hotel and they're like $69.99. And then you get the itemized bill and it's like city tax, state tax, regional tax, dog fee tax, tax, $133. I'm like, what? How did you?
That makes me want to fight.
Advertise online. Yeah. Like, and I don't know. That's what it reminds me of. So as far as I was about to get into a whole spiel as far as hotels go, because I like to use, I've been converted to, no plug, not getting paid for, a Hotwire guy. Hotwire has been pretty consistent. I know some people don't like it because it's the one that doesn't tell you about the hotel room until you get the hotel room. But I pick a certain number of stars that I've become accustomed to over the years. And I have been generally not only satisfied, pause, with the hotel services, but also have gotten hotel chains and communities that I like.
Man, don't be ashamed of your 1% status. You can say that it's the Ritz.
Yo, according to you, man, I'm like in the 85% status. So as far as expenses go, how do you want to tackle this, brother? You want to go line item by line item?
Yeah, I think we can just go through it. And what we don't have thoughts on, we'll just keep it moving.
So just to give you all some context here, we're about to walk through $271,100 in expenses, line item by line item. So, yeah. So their net salary, to give you some context there, some net salary is $278,400. And we're about to go through $271,100 in expenses. So you can imagine what their take-home income will be. So childcare for two children, which were ages 3 and 5, $42,000.
That's not crazy to me.
Are they staying in the Ritz? Are they putting the kids in the Ritz?
I don't think so. And I was having this conversation with someone recently about the cost of childcare in the Bay Area. And the advice that they got was to have a month of rent pretty much ready. What'd you say?
Buy a dog. Yeah,
well, I mean, actually, now that I think about it, having Mello, the magic Yorkie, probably is saving us a lot of money in the interim while we're also getting some training on parenting as part of the process in some roundabout way. But I have heard that you're supposed to have the equivalent of about a month of rent, or maybe it was he said the number, and then I was like, that's a month of rent. That's actually probably more likely how it went, because it was like $3,000 a month in childcare, and that's for one kid. And so if we do that over 12 months, that's 36 grand right there. And so if you have two kids, I'm sure you probably get some special for having a second in there, but $42,000 for childcare does not feel overstated to me. It actually feels like it might even be understated. And of course, again, I know I'm using the Bay Area as my example, but for the purpose of this conversation, without having looked at 1,000 reports, I'm going to assume that there's some similarities between the Bay Area and New York.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I'm actually going to go through that a couple times as we move through these expenses, but I was able to do a quick search here. The average cost of daycare in the U.S. is $11,000 per year. Remind you, they have two children. That would be $972 a month. However, prices range from $3,500 to $18,000. So there's clearly some nuanced discrepancies as far as the range of childcare. So that $18,000, which would get us to about $40,000, must be that Bay Area, New York childcare Ritz. Find me in the Ritz-Carlton. Coverage that they're providing for these children. So I don't know. I don't have any kids. I would need our listeners to write in. That seemed glaring and shocking to me. But maybe when I said that, half our listeners were like, yeah, they just shrugged it off. They're waiting for the next expense.
Wait, so when you say 1800, that's for the year, or you mean 1800 per month for childcare?
18,000. 18,000 a year is the high range.
Yeah. So then for two kids, 36, then yeah, I mean, that's still not grossly out of the ballpark.
Yeah, so that monthly range, that luckily they have that here because I could not do that math in my head, is $300 to $1,500 a month.
Yeah, I think with the more expensive cities, that goes up significantly. And then also, you got to consider the quality of the childcare. And that's something else to think about. So some of the stuff that's in this list, I'm kind of like, all right, you're really stretching it with that being a necessity. But I don't think wanting to live in a decent neighborhood, I'm not talking about you got to have 2,500 square feet, two pools, some type of fountain with something spitting water. Like, that's not what I'm talking about. But just to have a comfortable life where you don't have to worry about if your significant other is walking from the store to home, or you're hearing things that, are going on in the news, I think that there's a definite value for peace of mind. So I will say that. Now, of course, someone may be at an upper echelon establishment, but it's not upper echelon. And so they don't feel that they're getting that level of quality. But I'm talking about the average person who doesn't want to have any safety concerns or who doesn't want to deal with any type of BS.
Okay, well, I'm going to leave that there because I'll have plenty of comments in these later areas. And I'm going to walk through, just so we're on the same page, down to property insurance, because I bucketed some of these categories. So food for four, which in parentheses says includes date nights every 2 weeks, which, you know what? And I forgot to open with this disclaimer. This entire show, as all shows are, is a judgment-free zone. I don't tell people how they spend their money. I really don't even care. You know, how you spend, don't debit from my account. So whatever. I am just merely making observations from this public information provided to me through the Samurai blog. Food for four with date nights every 2 weeks, $23,000 a year.
So I know you want to jump, but I could not make this number work. I was trying to figure out why. I'm like, $23,000 seems like a lot. And I thought about what we budget for food. So between groceries, meal delivery service, even if we budgeted $800 a month between two of us. So that's what? $800, $1,200, $9,600, almost $10,000. I just don't, I'm finding it hard to see where the other $13,000 comes from. I mean, I can see some percentage of that, but just $23,000 for food and even for the date night, I feel like that could definitely be done cheaper. What do you think?
So I had to give myself some. And once again, I have no children. I have no framework to work from. To give, you know, some easier numbers to work with, that's about $1,900 a month. And I'm going to divide that by four. That is about $500 a week. And I have to assume, because groceries is not covered on here, that this is all food related expenses. So I can, it's luxurious. Don't get me wrong. They're probably eating a lot of red meats and seasoned, you know, salt based seasoned foods. But,
and 1 pound lobsters.
Yeah, $500 a week.
That's a lot, bro.
Including date nights and food for four, assuming they don't eat at home, because I'm thinking that's not groceries. I can see it. It's high, but I can see it. I could see how you could spend $500 a week on four people, a family of four. Eating good. I want to be clear. They're not eating ramen. You know, this isn't macaroni and like microwave fish. Like, they're eating good on $500 a week. But I could see it. This actually makes more sense to me than what I'm about to talk in these next four line items.
All right. I'm going to just keep doing this math on the food, though, man. So they're eating good, but they could probably be eating good for less. But that might also require some extra steps out of them, like cooking every now and then.
So, yeah, I'll go ahead and give some context for how I came to this. I usually go grocery shopping about every 2 weeks. I probably spend $100 to $150. So that's $300 a month. But I'm one individual. And so let's say I had a family of four. You wouldn't outright multiply that by four. So I could see it multiplying by like 2.5 or something like that. So I'm probably at a roughly $700. And that's just groceries. And sprinkling a couple $200 dates. I mean, boom, boom, bam. Boom, boom, bam. I'm right there with them.
All right, man. I'm going to let it cook.
So I'm going to move on. We can come back to this because, you know, yeah, it's all interrelated. So I'm going to come back to this, but I'm going to group these next four: mortgage, home maintenance, property taxes, and property insurance. And you'll hear why. So mortgage, here's where I feel like, all right, I feel like they're doing it too big. And I have to assume, since they put this out there, the whole reason I'm like being so, if I am coming across as critical, is they clearly, I would think they're putting this out there because they're like, please help us. Where can we cut? And I see.
Yeah.
A lot of areas. So mortgage is $600,000 because they have a $1.5 million home, which is interesting because they only estimate $5,000 for home maintenance. I spend more than $5,000 on my car. So I feel like home maintenance is greatly underestimated for a $1.5 million home.
Yeah, we have an episode that's coming up about that where we're going to talk a little bit about the whole rent and own and home ownership expenses thing. So I think that'll be a good follow up to this.
So not only are they spending $5,000 on home maintenance, they're underestimating it. They're spending $20,000 on property taxes, which they can't help. They have a $1.5 million home. They're just paying the taxes, I'm sure, that is allocated to them. They have $2,500 in property insurance. See, some of these numbers don't make sense to me. How can you have $2,500 on a $1.5 million home?
Well, that's what they pay.
What are you insuring? Like the front door?
Because the renter insurance I pay, it's $225 a year. So if this is for a house, depending maybe where they live and a whole bunch of other factors, maybe $2,500 for the year for homeowners insurance isn't out of the question. That one I don't have as much insight into.
Yeah, me neither. It seemed low. But the reason I'm focusing on these areas, because I totaled this down here, is they are paying... I didn't readily total this. But I have it under self-imposed expenses. So a $1.5 million home, looking at mortgage, and I just grouped all these total home-related expenses. They are paying $87,500 in just home-related expenses. So, to your point, for that security, to send Timmy and Shelly, I'm going to call them.
I was going to say Tina. I don't know why, though.
I'm going with the kids, actually. So, actually, this would still work. So, Timmy and Shelly, the children of...
Tommy and Tina?
There we go. They are spending $87,500. Feel like they can cut there. I feel like that's a choice. I bucketed this under self-imposed expense.
Yeah. So here's what I would say. You can do, and again, I know it's not complete apples to apples, but in the Bay Area, you can easily pay $1 million for a home that's not even that crazy. And it's part of the reason I have no interest in owning property out here. Like, you could buy a $1 million home that's like not even 1,500 square feet, which to you, I'm sure that probably sounds insane.
Yeah, it does. I could probably get a 2,000 square feet home out here in a nice area for under $300,000 easily.
That's what I'm saying, man.
I already have an area in my mind right now.
Yeah, and this is not even, because every now and then we'll be walking around and we'll pass one of those real estate places and we'll look on the door and see what spots they're advertising. And it's like, beautiful home in the hills, 1,200 square feet, $1.2 million. And it's like, yeah, no, that's not going to work on any type of level whatsoever. But that's normal.
Yeah. I feel like they've made it normal, but I do see what you're saying, because I feel like this falls under the grouping of the term that I've heard before is when you're home rich, but money poor.
Mm.
So they're home rich. They got a home worth $1.5 million, will probably appreciate in value over time, because if you're living in this type of area, your home values are more likely to appreciate even in downtime or plateaued times as far as nationally.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm looking to cut costs, and usually home, food, and they fall very well into this, and apparently childcare in their case, but home and food are like one of the top two of the three areas that people spend the most of their money. So when you want to look to cut, obviously you want to go to your largest expenses. So that $87,000 seems ripe for opportunity to cut.
I like how you put that in a real positive perspective.
And this one just seems blatant. Three vacations a year, $18,000.
You know what's funny? I was looking at this list multiple times and I was like, all right, maybe I'm misreading the property insurance line and the 3 years of vacation line. And it's supposed to be three vacations a year for $2,500.
Tip of the fingers.
Yo, I can't remember the last time I've taken a full, true, even 1 week vacation where I did not work and I was off of work for 7 days. So I'm not talking about 5 days plus the weekend. I'm talking about I'm gone for five work days. The weekend comes around and you still don't see me the first 2 days of the next week.
So that's 6,000. I'm trying to figure out how you even get there. That's 6,000 a vacation. And I'm trying to think of some of the more illustrious vacations that I've gone on. I mean, I've gone to all-inclusive resorts with other individuals. We didn't go three times, but we didn't drop anything close to 6,000.
Well, all right. And here's what was somewhat confusing about this is
I'm going to hop on Groupon and see what I can get for 6,000 while you walk through there.
So I was going to say, so there's childcare, but then there's also the age of the actual children. So I'd imagine when a child is younger, and actually in talking with this about Boobookins, I was kind of like, oh, okay, that makes sense. So I imagine the younger the kid is, the less of a food expense they probably are because they're eating the same like things of kid food. baby food?
Yeah. I think that's accurate. I think that's what babies eat.
Yes. I don't know why I struggled so much with that.
But that's kind of also like somebody was telling me they invited me on a trip to China and they're like, I can't wait to get Chinese food. And I was like, well, I'm pretty sure they just call it food.
That's pretty bad. That would be kind of, you know what? If I was just sitting on a subway and I heard someone next to me say that, like while we're like in China, I'm like, you mean food? Sustenance?
I'm pretty sure they have American food. They go out for American food, which they probably don't actually. It'd probably be disgusting. But anyway, to continue, I don't want to distract.
Yeah. So basically all I was saying is that if the kids are older and they have more eclectic taste in food, I could see that driving that expense up. And then also, depending on the age of the kids, they may also have to purchase a flight ticket for each of the kids, depending on how old they are and how big they are. So I'm like,
But did that get you to 6,000?
No, it doesn't. I still think this is like, all right, 3 vacations a year. I still think that that's a bit much. I would say 1 vacation a year. Now,
oh, wait, I've got something to work from. 5,000 is a lot of money. A New York Times article where you can take your family on a $5,000 budget. They don't really say what a family is, but I just want to give some context here. You can take them to Kauai, Hawaii.
Oh, Kauai.
You can stay there for... Oh, Kauai. Well, excuse me. One percenter.
Yo, I am tired of you trying to make me sound like I'm in the 1%, man. I live in California, which is a 4-hour flight from Hawaii. If I was like, ooh, Dominican Republic, would you be treating me this way, brother? Would you be treating me this way?
I'm going to move on.
I didn't think so.
Actually, this is a 7-day trip for a family of 5. Here we go. And it would only cost $36.70. So these people are doing, oh, well.
The most.
Okay, I guess that doesn't cover food. And let's see. It does cover for food. So you can go all the way to Hawaii for 7 days with food and activities and shopping. This is all included. And still do this, according to this budget, for under $3,600. Was this article printed in 1980? No, 2016.
Yeah.
So I don't know where these people are going.
Yeah. I just think 3 vacations a year, and let's say it's 3, because the Financial Samurai, he goes on to break it down and explain some of this stuff. And I remember reading that he's making the point that in America, vacation is frowned upon and it's much more of a culture of work, 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 work. Whereas in other parts of the world, a 3-week vacation is nothing, which I believe that, because I know we've talked about how we'll have offices that are located in other countries and it seems like they're always off. And it's just like, oh, you try to email someone about something on a random Monday or Tuesday and it's some day that you never heard of. And I guess you wouldn't have heard of it because it's not particular to your country and people are off from work. And I'm like, yeah, I get that. But then there's also the reality of life here and what most people have probably done. And I know there are people who would be happy to even be able to take a 1-week vacation.
Yeah. Don't they go on like sabbatical or something? See, it's so foreign to me. I don't even know what it's called. They actually have a name for it, where they just go on these 2-week vacations.
Yeah.
And speaking of which,
I think that's just like vacation for executives. They're the only ones who I can see pull that off. But anyway, go ahead.
There's another trip here. Christmas, keep that in mind. In Germany, 14 days, 13 nights, 2 adults, 3 kids for $6,700, including food and lodging. So I don't know where this family's going. Maybe they're going to Germany. This is the closest trip I could find on here. Even Belize for 8 days is cheaper. It is $5,700. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what they're doing. For a family of 5.
3 vacations a year. And they're like, oh, so I guess we got to do spring break. They're probably summer in the Hamptons somewhere. And then the third trip is, I don't know, somewhere fancy like Fiji.
And Reddit actually had a thread, but only thing that was offered is you have a budget of $6,000 for a week-long vacation anywhere in the world. Where would you go? Your mother and I would go out for a nice seafood dinner. Then I would never call her again. So there's also that.
Yeah.
But I think the point being is vacation's clearly a choice. They could take 1 year off and save $18,000. 1 year without a vacation would save them $18,000, according to this analysis.
Or they could just go on 1 vacation a year.
Look, we've saved this family like $20,000 already, man. We're not even halfway. We're not even 50% through the list.
Bam, they could go on 2 reasonable vacations and still not top out this $18,000 or not come close if they play it right. But I know
apparently they could go to Belize and Germany and still have $8,000 left over.
Yeah, I'm not pitying them here.
car payments for a BMW 5 Series. I actually don't know what the series are, so I guess that's the top of the line. And a Toyota Land Cruiser, which is a strange drop-off, $9,600.
I'm actually trying to look up BMW. Let me see. Is there a 7 Series? I feel like there's a 7 Series. So there's a 7 Series. So they're like middle-of-the-road, entry-level luxury car. So they try to balance that out with the Land Cruiser, though.
Yeah, I guess that's where they found their savings in the Land Cruiser, the Toyota Land Cruiser. I assume that's the family-friendly vehicle.
Yeah, and that's what I was guessing from looking at it. So do you hold the BMW against them, though?
So here's how I look at it. Whenever you're trying to cut or save, or you don't know where your money's going, or your back is against the wall, then yes, I hold all your choices against you. However, if they were just, you know, like, well, we're fine and we got money to spend, we got money to blow, you know, big faces, you know, balling, that's what we do, Harriet Tubman's. Hey, you know what? I don't care where they spend their money, how they go about allocating it. In this particular scenario, I'm questioning the 5 Series.
You know what? I'm going to question it because they're driving a 5 Series in New York City where there's rain, snow, salt on the road, and other things that will eat at the undercarriage of that car. So that's just not a wise car to own in New York City or any city really where it snows like that and there's salt out on the road.
I actually found it strange that they, based on my stereotypical view of New York City and having never lived there, that they had a car at all. But not only do they have a car, they have two.
Yeah, I'm imagining they're out in some suburb of New York, but still, I'm like, And you know what? The whole thing with the car, I didn't learn that until I got to California. And when I drove the 02 Altima across the country and they were like, wow, one, surprised you're still driving this car. Two, we can tell that you're from the East Coast because of how rusted it is under the car. And I was like, oh, well, that makes sense. And they're like, yeah, that's probably why you don't see as many nice types of cars in New York City. Like you see them out and about, but when it's winter, as I looked back on it, I did see far fewer of the types of cars that I see out here all year round compared to living in New York, which was kind of interesting.
That is interesting. So there is some savings to be gained here, and I'm going to total these all up for you folks. Based on my opinion of potential savings in these areas, life insurance, $3 million term. Actually, I don't have thoughts on that. Yeah, I support life insurance, and it's fairly compared to where they're spending the rest of their money, it's fairly cheap. It's $2,500. Thoughts on life insurance?
No.
1.5 milli per child in worst case scenario?
This isn't my area of expertise, so I'm going to choose to be wise and stay quiet.
I can see that. Clothes for four people. And it specifically says no fancy bags, shoes, or threads, $9,500 a year.
See, no. No, I don't believe that you need to buy $10,000 worth of clothes per year.
It's also strange to me that you would say this is where you're not being fancy. This is where you choose to fall is on the bag. You could actually say, what are we at? Like $30,000 already? If we just cut out a couple of vacations, you can buy fancy bag, shoes, or threads. But that being said, they say it's $9,500.
You know,
but it doesn't top out there because I'm going to say this one because it's related. Children's lessons, sports, piano, violin, and academics, $12,000.
Yeah. All right. So we have this clothes thing. And I know I'm thinking to myself from the perspective of Silicon Valley, where if you wear a suit, it's like a really painful experience, or maybe just I feel that way. But so I remember when we were young, fam, there was the back to school sales for kids' clothing. And there was the 5-star first gear, and there was all of that other stuff. So maybe with the back to school shopping, and I would actually be curious to hear from some parents on this, but maybe with back to school shopping, somehow it gets that expensive. And with two kids, maybe you buy them some stuff for the fall, winter, you buy them some stuff for the spring, summer, but $10,000 a year in clothes still seems like a lot.
Yeah, it's about $800 a month. And now even I don't have something here. Like I've got nothing. I usually shop about twice a year. You're familiar with this. And it's usually around, you know, the winter or usually around the seasonal changes. I go in like autumn and I go in like summer. I go when it's getting cold and I go when it's getting hot. Now, I actually had to do it more when Denver. Now it's just warm and hot. So I don't even really have to go maybe once a year. And between my two trips, maybe if I bought all new shoes, shirts, pants, and dress clothes, I might go over 1,000. Maybe.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure I'd stay under 800.
Yo, I actually get yelled at.
And this is a month.
This is actually a very heated topic in the House of Jones. Like, because she's always saying, you keep wearing these free t-shirts that you get from work every day. I'm like, they're work t-shirts that I wear to work. Like, it's company pride. I'm like, why do I got to dress up, you know, if I don't have to? But she's like, you need to spend more on clothes. I know you're trying to save and do these other things, but you need to buy like more different types of shoes, more shirts. And I'm kind of like, why? I have stuff that's comfortable. It's presentable at work. If I need to go elsewhere, I will buy something at that time, or I'll bring back something that's lived in the closet and hope that it takes me to where I need to go. Now, admittedly, in the last year, I have had to buy a suit to go to a wedding because I had put on another old suit and I was like, all right, if I wear this and this is in pictures and Facebook calls this up as a memory in a year, I'm definitely not going to be happy about it. So let me at least go buy another suit. But those types of purchases are not the norm for me. And I'm guessing if you live in a city where you're active in the community and you need to be out and be presentable all the time, maybe you're going to Men's Warehouse or wherever else and you have to buy this. But I think for a family, and I realize I'm speaking to someone that doesn't have kids, but I think for a family to continuously have to spend 10 grand per year in clothes, it just doesn't seem right to me. That's like assuming everything that they wear each year, they're then putting it in a bag and giving it away, like after 1 year.
It also assumes, I don't know how you could spend 10,000 a year on clothes that aren't fancy.
Yeah.
Like it specifically has a clause here that says no fancy bags, shoes, or threads. If I'm spending 10,000 a year, I'm fancy. In my head,
this might be one of those situations where what's fancy to them, and so even fancy might be subjective.
Yeah, I see where you're going.
And so I'm thinking about it, and you know, I'm like Jordache, and they may be like Calvin Klein. Like that's like Calvin Klein. Like our kids only wear like Burberry cologne. Like it might be something like that. Or I'm always thinking of celebrities' kids. And Boobikins was telling me she saw this tweet about Blue Ivy and what she was wearing. And somebody on Twitter was like, I'm tired of seeing her wear a month of my rent. And it was like some little suit she was wearing that was probably like $3,500. Now, to the average person, that's extremely expensive. But to someone who thinks that they're living within their means and they want their kid to be in nice, normal things like the other kids who are around them, that may seem normal. So I'm going to assume some of that is at play. With them saying no fancy bags, that they don't realize how fancy they're actually being.
Yeah, because I do wonder when they, assuming this was like a first time, they did this budget breakdown, did any of these categories surprise them? Or were they just like, yeah, it sounds about right. I actually wish I could spend $15,000 on fancy clothes and bags. I wonder how their impression of their own budget was.
Yeah, I too wonder that. But this idea of children's lessons, I want to hear your thoughts on this one. Sports, piano, violin, academics, whatever that is.
You know, I'm all for the extracurricular, but I can't see me spending $12,000 on children's sports. And I would definitely say, once again, I would say like these last five categories are all choices. You can do whatever, but these, and to give some context here, that's those categories encompass 8, 10, 20, 30,000. So it's not like I'm just talking about pocket change here. So there's 30,000, not including student loan debt, which it's 32,000. So I'm just going to back that out. You know what? You have to pay your student loan. So it is what it is. But this other 30,000, which is miscellaneous, children's lessons, charity, which by the way is 18,000, and clothes, which are not fancy.
That's almost 50,000 right there.
Oh, yeah, I put the miscellaneous back in. But I feel like a lot of this, and it's something I heard before, and it used to make me mad when I heard it, but now maybe it's a reality. If you can't live on $30,000, you can't live on $300,000. But I think that the idea is if you can't budget how you spend $30,000, you'll just make the same mistakes at 10 times the level at $300,000.
That's a really good point.
And I don't know. Like the only thing that made sense to me was I did go ahead and plug this into a cost of living calculator, because also something I think has come up from a few of our listeners, and I will probably try to do a better job pointing out going forward, is the different ways in which money does not stretch around the country. And I actually had to start doing this because I thought I was grossly underpaid, and because folks were like, I live here and I make this, and I live here and I make that. And I was like, let me see if I need to move or if they're just grossly outpacing me. And then when I started plugging into these cost of living calculators, I'm like, okay, I'm where I need to be. Or in some cases, I was ahead and I just moved on from the conversation because I didn't feel like having that debate. So I did two things. One, I looked at California. San Diego, I believe, was the city I went with, just for context, to see how far would $500,000 stretch. So that's our baseline, $500,000 in New York. In California, that's the equivalent of $386,000. I'll round up, so it's $387,000. And then I did a search on cheapest states to live in around the country. So keep in mind, we're talking about $500,000 in New York. That equivalent in my city, Austin, Texas, is $211,000. If you move to Louisville, Kentucky, the equivalent is $204,000. Number three, Kansas City, Missouri is $211,000. We're back up to Austin, Texas, which I didn't know Kansas City, Missouri was that expensive, but that's a separate conversation. Hmm. Wichita, Kansas, $206,000. And Boise, Indiana is $203,000. So,
Idaho.
No, that's Indiana.
Wait, there's a Boise, Indiana?
According to this list.
Oh, I learn something new every day.
I might want to verify that on the side. With that being said, in every city except for California, you would need less than half the same amount of income than you would to live in New York. And to give that further context, if you were used to spending $30,000 on children's lessons, charity, and miscellaneous, you would be spending... I can't even do that math in my head.
Yeah, I wasn't going to try.
The way that percentage would change and impact that. So I'm saying that if you made $500,000 in New York and you continue to spend $30,000 when you move to Austin, because that's what you're used to doing, you're eating up almost twice more of your income in percentages because you're not even making half.
Yeah.
I've seen that on the back end. I don't think people account for that. I've actually seen it go both ways where people are like, well, I made $100,000 here, let's say New York. I'm going to move to Cali and I'm going to make $150,000. I'm ball out.
Nah, it doesn't work.
And I'm like, well, really, you got like a 10% raise. Or I've seen it where people don't even use a cost of living calculator. And they're like, well, I made $50,000 in Louisville, so I can live on $50,000 in New York. And I'm like, that's going to fail.
Yeah, no.
And so I think I've drove it home on a few episodes, but I'm going to put this cost of living calculator for, it's from CNN Money in this particular instance, but I'd use up to three. I usually average them. Because there's such a wide variety in the formulas and methods that they use for calculated cost of living. But it is two part. You need to know how your income will stretch or shrink when you move around the country. And regardless of how it shrinks or grows, you need to have a budget.
Yeah.
Because these people seem to have a budget. But what's left, and I told you, I talked about this at the beginning of the episode, and this is yearly. So after all these expense categories, they are left with $7,300. They take home $278,000, and at the end of every year, they are left with $7,300.
It seems like, I'm hoping a lot of this has tax write-offs written in it, and they're getting money back that they're not telling us about. Like, for example, charity, $18,000, they can write all that off, right? It's charity, or some portion of it.
Yeah, they can write some portion of it. I'm sure they can itemize it. I'm sure, well, actually, I don't know because it's not captured in here. One of these expenses is probably a very good CPA because it sounds like they need one.
Yeah, well, and I hope so.
May want to allocate some of these savings back into an investment advisor because our financial advisor, because I would say, and this is probably being generous, based on some calculations I have and putting these categories together, their self-imposed by choice expenses total $134,000.
So those are their discretionary expenses, $134,000.
Yeah, they spend $134,000 on a choice. And to put that in context, that's 48% of their take-home income. 48% of their take-home income is just them going, ball out. Spend it. And if you're wondering what those categories are, that's $87,000 in total home expenses, $18,000 in vacations, $9,600 in car expenses, which I'm not saying they need to get rid of their cars, but do they need the current cars that they have? And children's lessons, just $12,000. I don't have any children. I'm not saying give the children up for adoption to get rid of this cost, but $12,000 seems high to me. And I just realized I don't even have the clothing in there.
So
let me say this real quick. If they didn't go on vacation for a year and they didn't buy new clothes, they'd save $28,000. Go ahead.
That sounds insane.
Your turn, good sir.
So I was going to say for children's lessons, because I know in parentheses in this chart, it says sports, piano, violin, academics. So if we shift academics to the front and we say that this is to enroll the kids in private schools, this is to get them hooked up with a yearly sports program, football, basketball, whatever thing it is, because we want to live vicariously through them because we weren't able to achieve these things by the time we graduated high school and realized that our athletic careers weren't going anywhere.
Nice.
Maybe I can put the 12K in that. And then if not, what's surprising that I don't see here, and I can't remember if he explained this further down in the actual article that he wrote along with this, but let me make sure I don't see this. But saving for the kids going to college.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So
I don't even see that. You're saying that's not a line item?
So I don't see it as a line item, but if we take children's lessons and repurpose that as college fund, private high school, whatever it is, I feel like that becomes, it is still a discretionary expense, but it feels like less of a discretionary expense if we were to look at it that way. What do you think?
Yeah.
You still sound on the fence.
I'm looking at his debatable expenses, his debatable expense categories. I actually encourage listeners to write in and not tear this budget apart, but where would you find budgetary savings in these groupings? And I say that because
I like the way you flip that to the positive. Good stuff, brother.
Appreciate that. And I say that because the exercise is more about, in my opinion, the best allocation of your budget. Because clearly you can have $500,000, or as he talks about in this article, you can make $50,000. If you don't know how to allocate your budget percentages or expenses in a way that you can live on, it doesn't matter how much you do or do not make. And in fact, you will always be chasing more money because you are improperly or poorly allocating how you spend money, period.
Yeah.
So his debatable expenses are food for four, car payments. Okay, so I'm two for two. Three vacations a year, three for three. Charity and alumni giving. I actually didn't even have that on that. I thought that was high, but I was like, you know what? I just couldn't even speak to that. Children's lessons and miscellaneous. So I was one, two, three, four, five for six.
Yeah. I mean, wait, and so the one you didn't have was charity?
Yeah.
18 grand for, I mean, I understand wanting to give back and maybe for, because one of the examples they give, it says feed the children and then it says college alumni. And I know if I say anything ill about supporting feed the children, I will get daggered and skewered. But college alumni, maybe they're putting money toward having their name on a building so that, what were the kids' names we went with? Shelly or Timmy. It's easier for them to get into that particular institution down the road or something like that. I don't know.
Well, here's why I left it alone. Because there is so much other fat in this budget, they could easily make back that $18,000. I easily think they're, like I said, they're spending $134,000 in categories I think they can cut back on. $134,000. So I think they can keep the $18,000 because they have so many other areas ripe for cutting back on.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And even with the miscellaneous $10,000, I think now it would be awesome to have $10,000 for the emergency fund. Most people aren't going to come anywhere close to that. And of course, with the income we're talking about for this household, most people in their lifetime probably aren't going to make that much per year. Either aspirational. This is like 1% problems. Actually, I'm pretty sure this does put them in the 1%.
I was laughing for two reasons, because he specifically has a category called Who Needs Two Cars at NYC? And the first sentence is nobody, really. So I was laughing for that reason. And he reminded me of something I forgot, is the purchasing power of a dynamic couple. So regardless of how we looked at this, these two individuals, it doesn't go into how long they were married. They married from going from $250,000 each to $500,000. So kudos to them. Like, that is definitely the kind of, well, I back in the day, I could just say Trump here, but you know, I don't even mean the man Trump. I meant the word Trump, but now I'm so paranoid about using. So that is the kind of power moves, chess moves I'm going to go with that I would like to be making in my life. If I could find somebody who makes, you know, a third or twice or a quarter of my income and we move into a whole nother bracket, like, you know, like Steph Curry with The Rock. Hey, that's the wave.
That is the wave. That would be awesome.
So I guess Yeah, kudos to them. But I, interestingly enough, I wonder how they lived before. When they were individually making $250,000 a year, I wonder where these allocations were.
I would also love to know what type of money they came from. Because I'd be curious to see if these expenses that they feel are necessary, if these are the same things they had growing up. So they're just trying to keep up with what they had as kids. And of course, I'm sure there's all types of other things that could be inferred, but I think that would be interesting. And he's probably, I'm sure if I, or if we email the financial samurai, he'll tell us go to hell. If we're like, can we get the contact info for, he'll probably be like, nah, that's not going to work, bro. Especially since he said that they want to stay anonymous. But some of this, it's clear that it's like, all right, you could be doing a lot better. But then as I was saying earlier, some of this in terms of like what's considered expensive and what's considered necessary, that's going to be somewhat subjective. Now, I'm not letting them off the hook because if our household income was combined 500K and we had two kids, we would not need to write to anyone asking how do we do better.
I mean, I think I would. I could not. Now, it's easy to say this, you know, I'm throwing stones from a glass house. But I could not see how, and I can't put the percentages to it, but it would be a significant increase from the amount of income I make right now. And I think that's more of how I'm looking at it. Yes, could I find a way to spend $500,000? Like if someone kicked in my door right now and said, like, we challenge you to spend $500,000, you got 24 hours. Can I find a way to do it? Yes. But I just can't see myself doing it. Even if you did add two kids to the scenario, I, in my head, and maybe it's my upbringing or how I view the world or what I see as important or unimportant, which has changed over the years because of some of the struggles and trials and tribulations that I've been through, I just couldn't even figure out a need to spend $500,000. And going to this Financial Samurai website, his thinking on his base pay kind of aligns with mine. And if you go to his about section, I'll put this in the show notes. He says that he could live happily, and he did when he quit his job, on $80,000 a year. As he transitioned to this website and some other passive income streams that he was using. However, he thinks maximum happiness is $200,000 for an individual and $250,000 for a couple. And I can see that. That makes sense to me. That math makes sense to me. And it's not that money buys happiness, it's that money affords you comfort, which buys time. Time is precious, more money, but you cannot make more time. Thus, money does allow you to be happier for longer periods of time.
Yeah, I think he said somewhere in there that money is a tool to buy happiness, or money is a tool to pursue happiness. I've heard that money is a tool reference a few times in a few different ways. And
well, the reference, the reference I've heard is that money can buy you a wave runner, and you've never seen someone unhappy on a wave runner. I've seen that metaphor used multiple times, actually.
I've never actually ridden a wave runner. Have you?
I have several times, and I defy you to do so over the summer months. Assuming you can swim, don't kill yourself. And I defy you also to be unhappy while doing so.
Hey, man. I don't know about getting on the wave runner. I still got some ways to go. I mean, I might need to get my floaty game up. But I'm sure if I got to the point I was doing that and I got past the first few minutes of being terrified, that I'm sure that that would turn to happiness or exhilaration or one of those other words that people experience after they conquer something that terrifies them.
I challenge everyone in the listening audience that can swim. Now, mind you, they'll give you a life vest anyway. You can also ride on the back, and you can rent them, usually from, like, I don't know. I guess that I won't guess what number because that's cost of living specific. Mind you, I live in Austin, so there are a lot of lakes out here. It's not like I have a friend of a friend of a friend in the 1%. I just go out and rent them. But I challenge you this
of course you
summer.
Do.
As it transitions and warms up, I'm going to ignore that. I'm going to be the bigger person. And get on a wave runner and then come back to me and tell me that money does not afford more happiness.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's other examples people can use. But you know, one thing I was thinking as we were going through all this, and I'm like, all right, if we could maintain this type of income and we were in a situation where we were like, all right, how do we make this go further? One of the first things we would do is look at moving from that expensive ass area.
Right. Agreed.
And some people, that's a big decision when you got to move out, or it's one thing when you're moving on up, you're like, yeah, I'm moving into this nice gigantic house. But when you're downsizing and you're dealing with the social pressures and the keeping up with the Joneses and all of that stuff, and you see people think that you're or you see people looking at you and you think that they're thinking you're taking a step back, but in reality, you're actually taking a step ahead of them because they're probably living beyond their means and you're doing something that's way smarter. It's hard to have that perspective in the moment, but that's truly the smart and best thing to do for the long-term picture. Now, I'm not saying everyone needs to just up and move, but if you're in a situation where you're, yeah, rent is an overhead cost, right? Or a structured cost.
I call it an expense.
Yeah. So if you have rent as a, let's say, a structured expense, and that's the one thing that's killing you, or one of the big things that's killing you every year, and it's like what you said up front, where you want to start with your biggest expenses, maybe you want to downsize in the size of the spot you live in. Maybe you want to look at a different city altogether. Maybe you want to find out if there's a market for whatever you do by day, or for whatever it is that you're wanting to do somewhere else that you can move to, save money instantly, and also do those things that you have really been wanting to do for however long. And he mentioned this idea in the story or in the article about, you know, do you want to compete with friends financially, or do you want to compete with them for freedom?
I jotted down three points. So one is a book that I read and I recommend folks read. It's usually on like the top 10 finances book, and it's The Millionaire Next Door. And they have a quote in that book that says, when they first started surveying and trying to go out and interview and understand how people became millionaires in the United States, it was a growing category. And we have like one of the largest growing millionaire groups around the world. And they said they started off by going to the people with all the high-end vehicles in the rich neighborhoods. And they found that a lot of those individuals actually didn't have any net worth, which meant they were home rich and money poor.
Yeah.
Number two is renting versus buying. So let's say you were, and I try not to be, and I try to recommend, but I know that it is something that is somewhat inescapable given the society that we live in. So you were worried about what others think. And we're going to talk about this in an upcoming episode. You can just as easily lease or rent a home in the same neighborhood. You can give off the same impressions, the same air. You can even upgrade your home and still pay less in rent than you can for a mortgage in a lot of these instances, plus the down payment. And then the thing that I underline, and I'll drive home because it happened to me, is temporary, temporary, temporary. I think a lot of people see these sacrifices like, I got to move out of my home. I'll never own a home again. They want me to live in a box in a tiny home like I read on CNN, these gosh darn hipsters. And it's like, no, no. In 3 to 4 to 5 of these categories, if they save these things for 12 months, they would have, first of all, the average American has less than $1,000 in saving. In this instance, if they cut back on 3 categories for 1 year, they would have like $30,000 in savings. That's number one. Number two, specific to myself, I actually did it. So not only do I preach the preach, I walk the walk. And you are familiar with this. I downgraded my apartment recently for this. I signed a 10-month lease. I found an apartment that was $200 less that met all my needs in another area. I did have to pay for moving costs. But
10-month lease, though?
Yeah, 10-month lease. Because they offered me a deal, so I don't want to go too far in the weeds. But basically, the apartment I wanted was not available, so they gave me a 10-month lease with an additional discount on the already cheaper rent and larger apartment because the one I wanted and we agreed to was not available.
Oh, that's a super sweet deal. I was just curious. I'm like, yep. Oh, finding a 10-month lease that's actually cheaper, it's so difficult to come across that. So kudos to you for that. I'm going to give you a little slow clap over here.
Well, there was some specific issues, but they were to my benefit. But I say that because a couple of people asked, like, oh, you know, I thought you were doing it big. You just wrote a book. Oh, you're debt free. Oh, you're going down to the smaller apartment. First of all, they met my needs. They don't pay my rent. And I'm like, why are you even worried about what I'm doing? And it didn't stop me. I did still downgrade to the smaller apartment, the cheaper apartment. And every month when I'm putting $200 back in my pocket or $2,400 for the year, I don't know what they're doing with their money, but I'm pretty sure they're not putting $200 back into their pocket. And I think that's the choice that matters. Like, okay, do you want to live to give off airs and impressions to appear wealthy and rich? Or do you actually want to be wealthy and rich? And I choose the latter.
Yeah.
I'd rather have money than look like I have money.
Yeah, I'd rather make it into the 1% than try to act like I'm in the 1%. Or like you, I could be in the actual 1%.
You probably are. And those are the choices that you have to make on a long term if you want to get there, or if you at least want to improve. And then you can go back to stunting and fronting you know, short-term sacrifices, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. What is something that you are, quite frankly, wasting money on right now that you could live without for 3, 6, 12, 18 months? And something that I found having done that in several different instances, and how I got down to about 55% of my budget right now, and I know that because I track my budgets, why we talk about it on the show, is once you give up something, the idea of giving it up always seems impossible. Going through the action seems impossible. But once you do it, once I went 3, 6, 12 months without something, I already have the evidence that I can go another 3, 6, 12. It actually seems more insane to me to like go backwards. I'm like, I've already proved it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for a lot of folks, it's actually doing it, proving it to yourself. And then you'll be arguing like, why do I need to go back to the $10,000 miscellaneous expenses? Why did we ever spend $12,000 on sports, piano, violin, and academics? And why was I spending $9,500 on non-fancy bag shoes or threads?
Yeah.
Like, it becomes equally crazy to you to go backwards because you thought you were going forward.
I like that.
That's all I got.
In fact, I'm making a note so that we include that in the notes here.
So that, at least for me, you're welcome to comment, concludes this week's Money Minute. And of course, if you have questions that need answering, although we have a question for you this week, please take a look at this article and let us know what you think, where you would cut, or you know what, if you balling out, where would you add?
Yeah.
So don't forget to comment on the website or email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com or visit paychecksandbalances.com and hit the Ask PB button.
Yeah, we'd definitely love to hear feedback on this one. I know we've seen people talking about it on the Twitters. It'll be making its way to the Facebook. I think I actually saw it a couple of times on the Facebook. So we'd love to get everyone's thoughts on this. And of course, thank everyone for listening to this episode. I know we have a lot of great stuff planned in terms of guests. Other episodes coming up. No This Week in Work, since we've just, well, so I guess today's Money Minute was the Money Hour.
Yeah. I apologize.
Oh, no, good brother. This was a story that I think it was definitely worth us digging in on, because there probably are people who are going to listen to this and be like, well, that sounds completely reasonable to me. And that's why we want to get your feedback. So again, thanks for listening to this episode. And if you're a budding entrepreneur and you would like to have your business, product, or service mentioned on the podcast, visit paychecksandbalances.com/small business. We've made it easy for you to reach thousands of listeners in 140 characters or less. Check it out. Again, paychecksandbalances.com/small business.
And as it pertains to the career, if we do revisit this, and that'll be dictated by you, the listeners, we might talk about some of these careers that can get you to that 1%, which is also covered in the article. So we'll be back.
Indeed.
Also, don't forget to join our email list by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email. You'll receive our weekly newsletter where we share interesting articles like this one. We've discovered actionable work and money tips and much more.
Indeed. So again, thanks to everyone for listening. Until next week. Don't spend $12,000 on lessons if you can avoid it. Be safe. We out. Peace.